And
I hope so.
So many listeners of the show are big fans of yours. David Tennant, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Delighted to. And actually, I wonder, you probably can't remember, you were on the show once before.
2005.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You remembered.
Of course I remember.
Look Back in Anger.
That's right, it was at the Edinburgh Lyceum.
That's
yeah.
right, and you won a Critics Award and everything.
Oh, well, that's... Well, you might say that I couldn't possibly comment.
Of course. And it was a fascinating time, actually, because you were keeping Stroom about the big secret
I
at
was.
That point,
I
which
absolutely was
that you
yeah.
were about to become the Doctor. And I'm just wondering, if you look back in that time, does it seem like a lifetime ago?
It does a little bit. It's funny. It's been a funny, slightly crazy few years. And I suppose, what, 7 years ago now? And in some ways it feels like an entirely different life.
Yeah.
And yet in other ways it feels like it's been the blink of an eye as well. That's that strange kind of, in that way that time can be a little bit odd, timey-wimey way. But yes, it does feel like a long time. It's funny that, because I was absolutely aware that it was all about to kick off.
And it was funny when all of that happened with Matt Smith too, because I remember sitting watching the programme that was to launch Matt Smith at the very end, and of course there were so many suggestions about who it could be, and I was sitting in a settee with three small boys who were all really excited, and that's a moment we'll always remember. It's like, there's Matt Smith.
That was so well handled. Yeah, they handled I think we learnt perhaps from the way things happened in the past to be a bit more stage managed about it this time round. So yeah, it was very nicely handled.
I think what we got from him was the same thing that you're talking about. This an indescribable feeling that you could maybe only tell close family about and nobody else. Yeah, it must have been very odd.
Really odd, yeah. Just that whole sense that you're sitting on this thing and you can't really quantify how big it's going to be or how much your life is going to change, mm-hmm. but you're aware that it's going to be... It's certainly fairly defining for at least the short-term future, if not the long-term.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, an actor's life is a strange one, and if it goes well, obviously, there's no better job in the world.
Mm.
But I imagine playing the Doctor, particularly for you as a little boy who grew up as a major fan, and that's sort of what made you think, I'd like to be an actor.
Yeah.
It is kind of in a category all of its own, isn't it, that role in that whole series?
That's the thing, it utterly... sort of surreal to have grown up with something and for it to have been a part of your life in one way and then for it to become a part of your life in a very different way. It sort of, even now, it doesn't really make sense. It just seems preposterous, really. Even now, sort of after the event, it's still a part of my life, but in a very different way again. Yes, it's odd, and yet it seems somehow right and proper.
It's a joyous thing hearing that music, because I don't know if it was intentionally or unintentionally, whatever, it ended up on the net, the wonderful sort of rap party video that was made.
Yes.
And it's just sheer joy. I mean, I do recommend people go and look at it, because it's basically it must have taken a huge amount of organisation.
Yeah.
Your smile couldn't be any broader, but it's everybody involved, cast and crew, all singing along and kind of doing bad dancing.
It is. It's on YouTube now, isn't it? Yeah. It was just done for everyone's amusement in lunch hours and you know, on people's camcorders. But Jenny Fava, who was our second AD and is very good at things like that, she took it upon herself to put this video together. And then I happened to be in a radio show that the Proclaimers were on. Mm-hmm. So Jenny came along with her camcorder that day as well, so that the Proclaimers also feature in their own video.
Have you seen their recent video where they're in drag, but not camp drag, just kind of, you know, like middle-aged elderly lady drag?
I haven't seen it yet, no. But Matt Lucas directed it, I think. I was hoping to be part of it, but I couldn't make it. But I can't wait to see it. No, it's a great new album, so it's very exciting.
I think you'll like it, because when I heard that Matt Lucas was getting the Proclaimers into drag, I was just thinking, you know, I'm a lady and all of that stuff.
Quite.
But it's absolutely the opposite. It's so low-key, and I won't give away the ending, but he makes an unexpected appearance too, as you might expect.
I'm sure he wouldn't be able to resist.
What do you think of the whole idea of, are you aware of this, that the Proclaimers musical Sunshine and Leith is now being talked about being adapted to the big screen?
It's a very exciting idea. I saw it on stage with Matt, in fact. We made a point of going to Scotland to see it, and it's a fantastic show, and we'll make a great film. I just hope it all happens and goes forward and that I get to be in a scene. That's all I hope.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was lucky enough to see you with, again with Small Son, was playing the Dane in London. And clearly, I mean, that's all in the past now, but was that something which, a bit like the Doctor from earlier on, once you were established as an actor, is that one of those parts that most young men think, quite like to tackle Hamlet?
It certainly was something that I always had in the back of my head, that if ever that opportunity arose, it was something that you had to take. You know, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's one of those Olympic events for actors that you want a crack at. And you know, there's that line in Withnail, isn't there, that Richard Griffiths says, "I awoke one morning and realised I'd never play the Dane," which of course is rather melodramatic and ludicrous, but there's part of you that as an actor wants to, you know, wants that chance, yeah, wants to be part of that club. And then of course you accept the job and you're doing it and you realise the pressure and the sort of the terrible, this extraordinary line of people you're putting yourself up against. Yeah. And suddenly it goes from feeling like something you've always wanted to do to feeling like a really terrible idea that could all go very badly wrong. But no, I'm very glad I got a go.
Alan Cumming has just been playing all of the parts in Macbeth,
the one man Macbeth. Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing. And I did a post-show discussion with him and with the director, John Tiffany. It was great because the night we did that, there were lots of schools in.
Great.
And they asked a brilliant question, which they both loved, which was, what is it you love about theatre? And both of them said the same thing. They were united sort of saying, particularly with a show like that where you could hear a pin drop and there was much excitement about it. It was just like there was this two-way communication, and theatre at its best is all about the essence of being alive, they said. I wondered if that, does that strike a chord with you too as an actor?
I think that's true. It is like a sort of you know, the process of being in a show is sort of thrillingly terrifying. It really just puts you absolutely on the edge of sort of what you're capable of. And I mean, it's utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
Every time I do a play, I do find myself thinking, why have I put myself through this again? This is horrible. I'm so scared. I feel so ill. You know, nothing could be more terrifying than that first public performance. I think it's a bit like childbirth. Not that I've personally experienced that, but that sense that once it's over, you kind of want to do it again.
Yeah.
Because it you know, it does give you a high and an experience unlike any other, but it's also there's quite a lot of pain and quite a lot of terror involved as well.
Your career post Doctor Who has been sort of infinite in its variety, and it's just interesting talking about the contrast of doing something like live theatre. We also hear your voice a lot, so you know, everything from the brilliant Pirates film where you know, voiced the young Charles Darwin, to 2012, which that is such a brilliant series.
I have just this very minute come down the stairs from recording the final ever episodes.
Oh, how fab.
That's what I've just been doing before I spoke to you, Janice.
What is it like? Because I guess it must be a huge amount of fun for the actual actors, but we don't see you unless there's some twist where you appear. You're not saying anything. Interesting. But just the narration, is that... I mean, it must be difficult not to corpse sometimes.
Oh, it's really difficult. And especially these episodes, because they're right up to the wire. They're going, and they're editing now. They're going to be coming out. Obviously, the Olympics is imminent, so they're quite last minute. So I hadn't even read some of the scripts as we were doing them. And they're so funny because they are so bone dry, you know.
People have actually said to me, who know folk who work for the game, saying it's not a satire, it's actually reflecting the reality.
I do wonder if John Morton, who writes and directs it so brilliantly, has got a little mole in there. He's saying nothing, but you do wonder.
And can you say the word catastrophization easily?
Catastrophization.
You're very good.
Yes.
I must say, when I watched The Pirates and Adventure with Scientists, I was vaguely aware that, you know, the voices of the main two were you and Hugh Grant. But, you know, it's an interesting thing. It was only at the end I thought, Darwin was David Tennant.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, he wasn't from Paisley, Darwin, it turns out.
You know, he wasn't from Paisley. But is that another interesting facet of what you do? Is that quite a sort of cold thing? Are you standing in a studio with the mic? Are you doing it to pictures, or is it done separately?
With something like Pirates, you sort of would come back over a kind of 2 or 3 year period as they sort of, you know, laboured away intensively in their studios. So you'd record a bit. You'd see drawings or maybe even a model of the character, and that would be your starting point. And then you'd record a bit, go away, and then they might show you a bit of animation they'd done to those early voices. So that gave you a bit more inspiration as you went on. So it was a sort of a bit of an unfolding thing.
Uh-huh.
And then at the very end of the process, you were going back and tweaking little bits that were maybe already animated. So it was a bit of a mixture of both, really.
And did you get to see, or indeed have a copy of your plasticine figure?
I didn't get a copy. I get to hold them a bit.
Oh.
But it's not something they give away. I mean, they cost thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
They're quite valuable and quite unique, so I'm sure they're all locked in an Aardman vault now.
Yes, I'm sure they are. The RSAMD, of course, now the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. Are you still?
How posh is that?
It is very posh. Do you still have contact with them? Do you come and do things?
I haven't recently. I've done a bit of. They have a kind of mentor scheme with students, which I've done a bit of, where you kind of have a current student that you are a sort of resource for. So that's the thing I've done most recently, although now it's a big posh conservatoire. I don't know. I haven't heard from them. I don't know what goes on now. I think I'm probably I'm probably a bit too common now to be involved.
I don't think so. I think your photo is still in the foyer.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
Yeah, it's big time framed. Do you think, it's interesting because you as a Scot, there's like a new generation of Scots who've come through big time. And I think maybe when you were growing up and I was growing up, there were fewer. There was Sean Connery and maybe a couple of others.
Oh, yeah, Fulton Mackay, that was
Brilliant, yeah. But do you think, is there an advantage in being a Scottish actor? Because obviously you can get Scottish roles, but clearly you can do other accents, English and American, but maybe with an English actor, they would very rarely be required to do, for example, a Scottish character.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think that is, broadly speaking, probably a bit true. Although you do get some people who can do a Scottish accent and do the odd one, you know. And then you get some Scottish actors who don't either want to or aren't interested in not playing Scottish as well. So I suppose I've always just been quite happy to cover as many bases as I can, cravenly. And there's something about, you know, acting in not your own voice, which can be quite, I don't know if it's liberating, because it's more liberating to have, you know, to be as sort of close to yourself as possible. But it can certainly take you in different ways. It makes you feel different if you speak in a different way, I suppose. So it's quite another acting tool that I quite like using, really.
Recently we saw you in True Love and I was thinking, what is it about you and the other David, Mr. Morrissey? Your paths seem to cross often.
Yeah, which is very pleasing, really. It's a nice path to cross. Although we didn't actually cross in True Love at all. We were in different weeks. And Billy Piper as well, we didn't even get to really,
because there was some overlap. And I thought, does Tennant pop up in the same one with Morrissey eventually?
I didn't.
With that one, that was interesting because how much of that was actually improvised?
Well, the storyline was set. So you had a document rather than a script, which said, in this scene, Nick says this and they talk about that. And you'd kind of, that was sort of it. And you'd turn up and Dominic Savage, the director, would kind of say, so you haven't seen each other for 13 years. You're in a car outside your offices. You'll need to establish, you know, where you've both been and what you both think about that. OK, roll cameras. Let's see. So the first day of that, you overdo it, actually. You kind of think, oh, I've got to fill the air with lots of intelligent chat, which then, of course, doesn't sound like how people talk because we tend not to be particularly eloquent all the time.
Yeah, there are lots of Pinterest silences.
Yeah, and once you realise that that's okay, then it takes on a reality that I think is quite, it's not like a scripted drama, and it doesn't end up like a scripted drama, it ends up as something else, which is different but valid in its own way. So nice, when somebody knows how to use improvisation like that, like something like Dominic Savage does, it's, you know, it puts you on your mettle.
Yeah, indeed.
And you don't have to learn lines in the evenings. So it swings and roundabouts.
Let me ask you the question all the Doctor Who fans want to know. 50th anniversary coming up.
Yes.
Da, da, da. Sylvester McCoy was on the show not so long ago. It was lovely talking to him.
What does he know?
Oh, he claimed to know nothing.
Right.
But was up for anything.
Right.
I presume the same is true for you?
I am just... I who knows, Janice? It's difficult to... And are there plans? I don't know.
Stephen Moffat says there are, and he's very excited.
Well, I should chat to him more.
Come on, as a fellow Scot, you must have been talking to you. But it will be amazing, actually. I mean, the weight of expectation is huge.
The weight of expectation is always a dangerous honey trap, isn't it? Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
Fingers crossed.
I mean, I remember the 20th anniversary very fondly.
Yes.
It was a very exciting time as a small child.
Yeah.
So it would be nice if there was something that made people as excited.
Well, let me ask you finally, I mean, you're still very much in the public eye, tons of telly and all the rest of it, but has the kind of absolute obsessive fandom with the Doctor Who fans, has that maybe tailed off a little bit in terms of the recognition factor walking down the street?
It's funny, I think real... obsessive is quite a pejorative phrase, isn't it? But the very
enthusiastic
fans, I think, are enthusiastic forever, you know. And that's quite right and proper.
Yeah.
So... I don't know, it's funny. Even when I was in the middle of doing Doctor Who, there are some days you kind of don't notice, and then there are other days you can't seem to do anything, and that sort of has remained the same.
And presumably there are ways around it, because there are folk who court publicity, clearly you're not one of them, but I always remember, you know, reading about Paul McCartney, and you know, he and his, you know, taking his kids to school, going in trains, kids going to normal schools. It is possible, even if you're one of the most famous people in the world.
It is. I think, you know, it's partly how you choose to live your life, and especially if there are places you go regularly, if you just kind of do it for a bit, then people kind of stop. The novelty wears off very quickly, frankly.
I'm sure that's not true. David, absolutely delightful to have you on the show today. Really great to talk to you.
Well,
thank
it's
you
been
so
such
much.
A pleasure. Thank you so much for having
thank
me.
Thank you very much. We look forward to those 2012 episodes.
Yes, do. They're very funny.
Thank you.
Bye.